Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSNP. And today we have a special social justice series, and we're going to be talking about a very serious topic, domestic violence awareness. DV and intimate partner violence is still alarmingly prevalent in our national and local communities, and we still have inadequate and antiquated systems of support. Lauren Jake will talk about features of DV and intimate partner violence, some methods of harm reduction if you're in a violent relationship, and some ideas for solidarity and support of those who can't even feel safe in their own homes or living spaces. May and domestic violence awareness. Jake, you surprise me with this topic all the time. And well, this is really important, but why in May? Why domestic violence in the month of May? And welcome to the show, obviously.
Well, I believe that, thanks, Laura. I'm always happy to be here with you. I believe that May is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it's a topic that we haven't addressed so far in our social justice special series. And it feels like an important one to shine a light on because, unfortunately, it's still happens quite regularly, and often part of what makes it worse, harder for the person or people experiencing it is that there's still a lot of stigma and misinformation around it. People don't talk about it a lot. It's considered a dirty secret in a lot of cultures or communities. And so that just makes it that much worse for someone who's experiencing it. And it's something that we as a wider national community and our local communities really need to take seriously and do some work around, because, you know, the biggest cause, the most frequent cause of homelessness for women and families is domestic violence. And still in this United States, an average of 20 people are physically abused by intimate partners every single minute. And, you know, more than 10 million people every year, which is a lot of people. And it just seems ridiculous and sad and unfortunate that it's still so rampant, and that we just really don't talk about it very much. So that's why I thought it might be helpful for us to talk about it today.
Absolutely. And when you talk about cultural differences, I can, you know, witness that the culturally, for example, in Latinx, Latino, Spanish-speaking households throughout the United States, Mexico, Central and South America, it is very common to have domestic violence. And it is, as you say, you know, the little secret, the little big secret that is kept on all families, and is usually, you know, spousal abuse, and or it could be on other different ways, but it's mostly women and all the femicides that we see that happen. In Mexico, you know, about 9 femicides a day, and it's usually most likely their partner or spouse or living companion. It is horrible. It is horrible. And I have so much to say that I don't have anything to say. I'd rather you take a lead on this one and tell us what can we do. The only thing that I know actually is we are so trained to blame the victim And it is very easy for people to say, well, but why don't you get a divorce, or why don't you get out of the situation? It's not that easy. Tell us why, Jake.
It's definitely not that easy, and so let's make sure we talk about that for sure. But you're right that there are maybe particular cultural factors that make domestic violence more or less stigmatized in particular communities. But people across all races, all cultures, all ethnicities experience and perpetrate domestic violence. It's certainly not a thing that only happens, in Latinx communities or anything like that. People are just as likely to abuse their partners if they're white, or if they're Black, or if they're Latinx or some other race, across socioeconomic status, across religion, across sexual orientation, and so on. And one in three women, and one in four men, and a higher proportion of non-binary or trans people have been physically abused by intimate partners over the course of their lives. So it's definitely, there might be some assumptions that, certain groups of people or certain sectors of society are more likely to be involved in domestic violence, which definitely isn't true. What is true is that people with more socioeconomic privilege, with a better support net around them, are have resources to help them survive domestic violence, to help them have options, and to make it less likely that they'll feel stuck. But really, anybody of any socioeconomic status or any other kind of feature may very well feel that they don't have options. And oftentimes, the way domestic violence happens is, in cycles. And you might have seen a diagram that's called a cycle of violence that sort of explains what a lot of people who experience domestic violence experience, which can be really sort of confusing and disorienting, and make a person feel like she or they don't know what's happening in their life, or they don't know what to expect. Certainly make it feel like it's their own fault. But one thing that's really common is that there's, a maybe a period of tension building, and part of the strategy of power and control and sort of violence against a person who experiences it is that the perpetrator makes them feel like it's their fault, makes them feel like they're crazy, makes them feel like they deserve pain or punishment. Or that it's not really happening to them, or that it's not really that bad. There might be a sort of, after a period of building tension, there might be sort of an acute explosion or some kind of event or series of events where the violence is more overt and more acute. But then, usually, almost always, there's what they call the honeymoon phase, where the abuser goes through these mechanisms to try to, they might be pretending to try to make amends. They might apologize. They might do various kinds of bargaining and, try to sort of smooth things over. They might, act like they are sorry that they caused the pain or the violence. Or, they'll do something to sort of make it seem to the person who experienced the violence like, it's not going to happen anymore, like it was their fault, and if they do something different, they can avoid it in the future, to make that person feel like they love and need that abusive partner, and can't leave and things like that. Other kinds of strategies that abusers use include various kinds of isolation and control. So, domestic violence or intimate partner violence, it certainly is about violence and abuse. And there are lots of different kinds of abuse, not just the physical abuse we think of, but also sexual abuse and spiritual abuse and economic or financial abuse, and, you know, people who have legal difficulties or immigration without authorization or things like that. That's another huge vulnerability that often abusers will use against them. If they don't have access to medical care, or, you know, if they're afraid they might be found out or deported, those are things that employers use against people, that all sorts of people use against people. And even, unfortunately, you know, their intimate partner or their spouse might use against them. But, you know, isolation is a big tactic of abusers, and what we call gaslighting, which is making the person feel like they don't really know what's happening, or that their perceptions about what's happening are wrong, making them feel that it's their fault, that if they just behaved differently or did something better or differently, then the violence wouldn't happen, making, you know, really assaulting their self-esteem so that they feel like they deserve to suffer. They deserve pain and abuse. And when someone is in that kind of situation, they're manipulated, they're isolated, they're beat down, they're confused about what's happening. And then if you add to that, that the abuser is probably controlling all of their assets or their finances, they're probably controlling their friendships and family relationships and manipulating those. Those things all make it feel to the person like they really don't have a chance to leave or a choice to leave, that they're going to be stuck with this person forever, and that there's no other alternative. Also, you know, the statistics say that the most dangerous time for a survivor of abuse is when they're attempting to leave. The time that someone is most likely to be killed by their abuser is when they're attempting to leave, because that's when the abuser is losing control of this person or this situation, and they're likely to be sort of, you know, especially panicky or especially desperate to kind of maintain that control. And so you see this kind of, if I can't have you, then nobody can have you kind of attitude. And people know that, right? You know, the survivor of abuse, she or they're an expert in their own cycles of abuse, and they know that they're at risk, and they know, and, you know, the abuser has planted in them this idea that they can't get out, that they can't think of any other kind of life or way to make their life work. Maybe the abuser is a parent of their kids. Maybe the abuser is the person who owns and is on paper owning or renting the place that they live. So there are just lots of reasons why it's really hard to get out of an abusive situation. That doesn't mean that someone really is stuck and that they do have to stay for fear of, you know, getting murdered while they're trying to leave. And we can talk about some kinds of harm reduction, some strategies someone can use if they are being violated or abused by an intimate partner. I want to make sure we say the domestic violence helpline phone number before we're done today. We can also talk some more about the different kinds of tactics of power and control, if you want to, if that would be helpful.
Absolutely. And I love that you touch on the fact that it's not only physical violence, that it could be spiritual, it could be emotional, it could be the mind control. And again, you know, to reiterate that we are so trained on society to victim blame and to say, oh, why don't you leave, you know, or if it is that bad, why are you doing there? And, you know, to remember that a lot of the times it does not depend on the person that is being on the receiving end of this abuse, but it's because they have been groomed and isolated, and that is not something that happened overnight, but that is something that has been happening. So what are some other tactics that people can use, Jake?
Other tactics that abusers use to punish and abuse. Right. So we talked about I mean, everybody knows or thinks about the physical abuse, and that can be very extreme, of course, and can certainly be part of the cycle of violence. And oftentimes, though, there's this sort of threat of physical abuse and, the use of weapons as a threat, So, in the United States, people, we have more gun violence in this country than all the rest of the developed nations put together. We have more homicides. The presence of a gun in a domestic violence situation increases the risk of homicide by 500%. In this nation, it seems to be okay with us that children are killed by guns in their homes, that women and trans people and other people who are, surviving violence are killed, threatened, and abused by guns in their homes. The person who is abusing doesn't even have to ever use that gun. They just have to have one. And the person knows, the survivor knows that it's there. Maybe he keeps it under his pillow, he keeps it on his lap, he puts it on the table, he sits down to dinner and plops down this gun or some other weapon on the table. And she knows that, she's at extreme risk, even if he never actually uses that gun. So certainly physical violence is a big piece of it, pushing, shoving, as well as hitting, and that kind of thing. Certainly verbal and emotional abuse. You're no good. You can't do anything right. I have to do everything for you. You're stupid. All those sorts of things. I think of it as spiritual abuse when someone uses somebody's faith or scriptures against them and says, you're a slut, you have the devil in you, you're, God made me the head of this household, and you have to do what I say. I'm gonna tell the pastor on you. Any of those sorts of things are ways of using someone's theology or beliefs or religion or spirituality against them. They're definitely, patterns of abuse that are endemic in the kinds of cultures or enclaves where there's a strong belief that the man is the head of the household and that everyone else should be subservient or subjugate to that man, and that, it's the, spare the rod, spoil the child, all that sort of, it's the man's job to sort of brutalize everybody into compliance or whatever. So those are factors. Definitely there's sexual abuse, and lots of people in domestic violence situations feel like they have to sort of put out, to make the man or the abuser happy. They often are involved in sexual activities that they're not consenting to or that they don't want to be involved in. We talked about financial abuse, the man sort of, or the abuser controlling the money, even if he's not the only one who makes it, and sort of parceling it out. Like, you may hear someone say, this is my allowance. This is all I'm allowed to spend. I only have $100 for the groceries. He'll get mad if I don't have the things he wants in the refrigerator. I can't afford to get my hair done because, he didn't give me enough money or things like that. Definitely a sort of patriarchal system where, the man tends to be the one in charge of the finances and is the sort of default person on all the legal documents, makes that even harder. There can be things like destruction of property. I'm gonna break something that's important to you. I'm gonna break the, I'm gonna damage the apartment and you're gonna have to fix it, or else, the landlord's gonna be mad at you or something like that. Threatening pets, abusing pets or children, as, a way to control or intimidate the primary victim. Those are all the kinds of things that people do. And, you know, they'll sort of harass or stalk the victim and not give them any sense of agency or privacy or control, like keep track of their whereabouts using their cell phone or spy on them or say, you know, I didn't give you permission to talk to that friend. That friend's no good for you. They put ideas in your head that just cause us problems, you know, if that's a friend or family member who's maybe trying to convince the person not to put up with the violence, those sorts of things. And, you know, we as a national community, we compound that because we tolerate all kinds of things that contribute to patterns of abuse of women and femmes. You know, all kinds of sort of patriarchal dynamics and ways that we believe and imply that women are weaker and should be weaker and should, you know, have less authority and less money for the same amount of work and all those sorts of things. We have, you know, still a system in this nation where in order to get out of a domestic violence situation, the person who's experiencing it has to leave that home and go to a shelter and uproot everything in her whole life, and surrender all of her belongings potentially, or at least it might feel this way or appear this way to the person. Instead of saying, you know, if you behave badly in this home, you can't stay here anymore. We, you know, let him stay in charge of the home and make her go to a shelter. And there are more shelters for animals in this nation than there are domestic violence shelters. And it's not that easy to get into a domestic violence shelter. You know, I think lots of DV shelter providers try really hard to make them homey and comfortable and healing, but it's generally not comfortable for someone to have to, you know, flee for their lives and go to some strange place with a bunch of rules and curfews and, you know, live in close quarters with strangers who are also in crisis and do all your parenting in public in the middle of, you know, your crisis and your flux and transition. So it's a rough situation for people, and we don't really set people up for success in that regard. There's still, you know, lots of police officers and police departments who are not very savvy or sophisticated or sensitive or sympathetic, and they don't do what they need to do to protect the survivor and believe the survivor. You know, they get manipulated by the abuser. They get confused about what's happening or let themselves, you know, we don't have good gun control laws. So people who are in the middle of harming other people are still allowed to keep their guns, still allowed to stay free. You know, if you assault somebody in public, often you might have penalties for that depending on who you are, but you can assault anybody you want in your own home and don't necessarily have penalties for that, or can't expect, you know, for the police to hold you accountable. So those are all dynamics that we're all complicit in that make things harder for someone who's experiencing domestic violence.
And it seems like there's no way out. You know, it seems like everything, of course, in a patriarchal system is put up in place, is set up to have of holding the patriarchy, and it seems that domestic violence is kind of like part of this formula. However, there is hope. However, there are ways that we can be allies or that we can help some people. You were talking about a hotline and then certain behaviors in which we can become helpful to the people that is going through this situation.
Right. So I'm going to say this number now, and then I'm going to hopefully say it another time or two before we're done. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-9999. safe. That's SAFE, safe. Like you want to be safe. It's 1-800-799-SAFE. You might have a state domestic violence hotline in whatever your state is. And there are lots of provisions where if you're Googling, for example, domestic violence help, most domestic violence resources have a mechanism on their website where you can quickly escape it and it doesn't show up in your history in case somebody's checking on your web history. So watch for that sort of safe escape mechanism on a DV website so that you can, you know, check on that without worrying that that's going to show up in your browser history or whatever, or that there'll be cookies left on your computer. So definitely a good step is to call that hotline. And just because you call it, it doesn't mean that you have to be ready to leave right away or permanently, but that, you know, you are ready to talk about your options and see what kinds of resources are available. The main message I think we have that we want to have is that no matter who you are, no matter what you do, you do not deserve to be hurt. You don't deserve to be hit or violated or controlled by anybody. There isn't any mistake you can make, any accident. There's not anything about you that makes you a person who should be or deserves to be hurt. You deserve to be safe. You deserve a chance to heal. You deserve to be in charge of your own life and your kids' life. And you deserve to have the resources that you need to take care of yourself. And those do exist. They are available. And we can help you. So you can reach out to us. You can call that national hotline. We will help you find ways out. But, you know, you deserve to be believed. And if, you know, you're talking to someone who isn't helpful to you, who isn't believing you, who isn't helping you think about how to keep yourself safe, then don't talk to that person. Don't listen to that person anymore. Keep trying, because there will be somebody who will believe you and will help you and will support you to make your own choices. Nobody can tell someone when it's time to leave their situation. Nobody can make your choices for you but you. And if you are a family member or a friend of someone in a situation like this, it's really important that you have infinite patience to listen and to support them where they are, to meet them where they are, to do what they want to do and what they need to do to keep them safe. And most people who are in domestic violence situations leave that situation or attempt to leave that situation many times before they are willing or able to leave it permanently. That's just part of the cycle of domestic violence. It doesn't mean that the person is stupid or that they like to be abused or that there's something wrong with them or that they're not able to get their junk together or anything like that. It's just part of how the situation is set up that makes it often that way, that someone gets themselves sort of tangled up or gets tangled up in a situation that's really hard to permanently evacuate forever. And that's okay. That's normal. That's what it means to be involved in relationships and to have a life where, you know, you're not independently wealthy and, you know, there are pros and cons and complications. And, you know, even if you're in a situation where you're getting hurt or controlled, just because you've let it happen before doesn't mean that you have to let the same things happen again. You can always decide where your limit is, what you're willing and able to put up with. And you know that better than anyone else. And you can figure out where to draw the line. And you don't have to draw the line in the same place today that you drew it yesterday or that you want to draw it tomorrow. You know, maybe yesterday you put up with a certain thing, and today you're not putting up with it anymore, and that's okay. That's fine. Either way is fine. It's your call. You need to decide. Some things that people can do, in addition to reaching out to the DV hotline or reaching out to friends or family or finding that faith leader or finding someone else in society who's going to believe and support you and meet you where you're at and embrace whatever choices you want to make. In addition to that, you know, like we've been saying, you know, decide where you draw the line, what your limits are, and do what you need to do to take care of yourself. You know, nobody can take away from you your own self-respect, and you don't have to give that to someone just because you've decided for now to stay in a situation where someone's hurting or controlling you. You can still hold on to that sense of agency and that sense that you can be in charge of your future. Some other things people can do are, you know, if you can try to make an escape plan in advance, if you're able to do that, if you're safe enough to do that, and, you know, work on collecting your personal documents, any particular things like medicine or other things that feel really important to you to have with you when you're taking a break from that relationship or leaving it, you know, temporarily or permanently. Just gather those things, try to get that stuff organized as much as you can. Maybe try to leave it with a trusted person. You know, leave copies of your birth certificates and your kids' birth certificates and your medicine prescriptions somewhere where you can get them that are not controlled by the abuser. See if you can save money or get a credit card that the abuser doesn't know about or something like that. Those are possibilities. You know, make a plan with someone, use a safe word with your friend or whatever it is that lets them know that, you know, you're ready to enact your plan. Find out, you know, what kinds of resources are available in your community. And, you know, reach out to somebody, you know, like me or someone else who knows about these kinds of things to help think through what those options are. It's also helpful to sort of think about all the different parts of your life. This is part of how people get sort of stuck or overwhelmed, right? Because you may be able to leave your home where you're living, but, you know, maybe you're abusive partner knows where you work, knows where your kids go to school, knows where you go to your faith community or your running club or whatever else you're doing. And so, you know, making a safety plan means thinking through all those things. There are different kinds of protective orders that you can get. When you get a protective order, it doesn't mean you have to use it or follow through on it, but it means that you can get a judge's order that says that your abuser can't come within a certain distance from you, or they're not allowed to have a gun near you, or they're not allowed to behave in certain ways towards you. You can still have them live with you, but have this protective order that says that they can't hit you or that they can't meddle with your finances or whatever it is that you need to put in there. So investigate what your options are for an order of protection and consider those kinds of things. Also, you know, you might have access to a self-defense training opportunity or something like that. So consider a thing like that. I'm going to tell you now a couple of things quickly. So one sort of widely recognized sign is to draw a small circle on your hand. And I can't remember what it's called, what this campaign is called, but if you put a small dot on your hand, that's one sign that you can give to people. You know, you can hold it up at your car window, or you can sort of secretly show this to somebody if you're out in public with your abuser. Then that lets people know that you are not safe, that you need help. And if you see somebody with a dot on their palm and they show that to you, or they give you some other sign that they're not safe, then, you know, it's go time. It's time to do what you can to keep that person safe, and to back them up and to not leave them alone until they have a kind of wraparound plan with them. Also, you know, I have great privilege because I've never had to fight to protect myself. But I have heard that the things that are important to know are that most of us can't really hurt another person with our fists, especially if you're small or you don't have experience or training about how to throw a punch. So the parts of our bodies that can do more damage to someone, and I'm talking about the kind of damage you want to do to someone to protect yourself and to give yourself a second or two to kind of get away, are, you know, to jab at somebody's eyes or their throat with your fingers or fingernails, just pointed straight out like a spear, or with your finger spread, you know, like you're making a five sign, but you sort of jab at somebody's eyes or their nose or their throat with your fingers, using the palm of your hand and sort of thrusting it up against somebody's nose. So your fingers, the palm of your hand, and your elbow, those are good, and your knee, those are good sort of weapons for you to use. And you want to find the more vulnerable parts of somebody's body to put those weapons against. And if you sort of use those pointy weapons, you're more likely to be able to sort of stun somebody just enough to kind of get away from them. And one acronym I've heard is the acronym of SING, S-I-N-G. So that stands for solar plexus, instep, nose, and groin. Solar plexus is in somebody's, you know, belly. Instep is the inside of your foot. We know what someone's nose is, and their groin. So those are sensitive parts on a person's body where if you direct your knee, your heel, the heel of your hand, your elbow, you're more likely to do enough damage to that person to sort of stop them in their tracks so that you can get away. Very hard to talk about a physical thing like this in a podcast, but I hope that at least you're getting some ideas and you can look it up on the web. You know, put in SING for self-defense and you will see diagrams about it.
You know, as we were talking, or rather as I'm listening, and folks, I'm listening because I want to learn, and I'm not the expert on this topic, and Jake is, or at least they are more well-versed in how to talk about this. It's taking me 2 seconds to find stuff on the internet. I just put circle hand domestic violence, and I immediately got on the website, and it's explained, and there's photos. So I'm sure folks can check stuff on the internet and get more educated. And obviously, that is exactly the point on us sharing this information and making this show. And I would like to repeat that phone number, Jake, that you were talking about, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-7233 or 1-800-799-SAFE. And it's amazing how time has gone through. We are almost getting close to do the closing of this show. So if there's anything that is of the utmost importance that we haven't mentioned, please do so, Jake.
Well, the only other thing I would say is that people think that domestic violence is about alcoholism or about anger control or about mental illness, and it isn't, because plenty of us have mental illness and never do harm to other people. Most people who have mental illness don't do harm to other people. Plenty of us use alcohol or other substances, and that doesn't cause us to do harm to other people. And plenty of us can get very, very mad and never do harm to other people. So those are all just excuses and not the things that make somebody an abusive partner. So keep those things in mind. And someone needs to be able to take responsibility for the fact that they're hurting or controlling another person, and not find some excuse about why they're doing that. There are services and treatments available for someone who has used violence to hurt or control another person. And that starts with taking responsibility for your own conduct. So if you are someone who's used violence in a relationship, you can get help too. And in fact, it is more important for the people who are abusing others to be taking that responsibility, getting that help and stopping the cycle of violence, than to cause the victim of that violence to have to take that initiative and do that. And, you know, people surviving violent relationships are some of the most resilient people I've ever met. And if this is you, then please celebrate your own resilience and how strong you are to keep on surviving and facing another day. Do what you need to do to love yourself and take care of yourself and to find somebody who's going to stick up for you and support you no matter what you do. Even if you stay with your abuser forever, you don't deserve pain. You don't deserve suffering. You deserve to be believed and supported no matter what your choices are. So I think that's the last thing I would want to add to that. And, you know, there's so much more to think about and to learn about. So do that. You know, put that phone number in your cell phone. Whether or not you are someone experiencing domestic violence or you know someone who's experiencing domestic violence, because so many people do, and you never know when you're going to need that number. That number should be inside every bathroom stall in this nation. It should be on every elementary school bulletin board. It should be everywhere. So help spread the word also.
I have put it on my cell phone as you were talking about it, because it's really important to have it. And thank you so much, Jake. I know it's not easy to talk about these things, but you really are fantastic at doing it. And I invite every single person who is listening today, go back and listen to this show again and listen to it again as many times as you need to understand where you are and how to set those boundaries and how to ask for help and to understand, most importantly, that is not your fault. That is not your fault. It's a goddamn system that upholds this violence as something that is normal or natural. It is not. Let's break the cycle. Thank you, everybody, for most importantly, thank you, Jake, for bringing these topics and helping us understand. Thank you to everybody who listens to this show. I invite you all to listen to all of the other shows, Nature Mystic, Nature Spirituality, Moon Magic, Circle Talk, Paganos del Mundo, and of course, Lunatic Mondays, over 700 hours of podcasts are there on the CSMP archives. And until we see again, never forget that you are loved. Mostly today than every other day, you are loved. Goodbye.
You are loved.
Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSN Podcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.